Qua sopra.
Ai.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
And hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast. I'm your co-host Alexander Gungarudic, joined as always by Sammy Rowan for episode 169. Very nice episode as always, and lots to talk about. It's been a while, it's been a break. Believe it or not, the Whitecaps, Vancouver Whitecaps and MLS do take breaks. Just kidding, not everyone, because there were six games over the weekend. Because who believes in taking breaks during the international break? Not MLS, but we certainly took a bit of an MLS break and focused our attention elsewhere. Canada, their men's national team, played in their first final in 23 years. Didn't go as planned, of course. They fell 2-0 to the US, but certainly a lot keeping us busy over the international window. But as are things in MLS this season, you quick turnaround. It's you got a midweek game against the Colorado Rapids, game number 18 of the schedule. Of course, this you might be listening to this after that game happens, before. Either way, it's irrelevant. We're here because the Whitecaps in their last game hit the 17-game mark. And as those who are familiar with MLS knows, it means a lot because it's the halfway point of a 34-game regular season. It's the time where trends become reality. It's a time where you can really see what's wrong and how to fix it and what's good and what needs to be pushed. So we're going to dive into all of that in a mid-season roundup. So less about performances today and games and whatnot, more about big picture with the Whitecaps. And also BC League One hit its halfway point, so why not double up and talk some local footy? But anyways, all that long-winded intro to say, Sam, how are you doing this week?
Doing well. Yeah, obviously a little bit disappointing off the wake of Canada and the men's national team specifically. Good to point out, first, you know, major final in quite a while. We were talking about it right before the show. I was expressing my frustration at how disjointed CONCACAF feels with Nations League and the Gold Cup, where it's hard to know what competition to get up for. Do you side with the competition that has the top players, or do you side with the competition coming up in the Gold Cup that seems to have a little more lore and kind of feels to me like it should be a little bit more important? Ultimately, neither of them maybe have the juice you'd really like them to have. Commiserations, you know, to Canada. Would have been nice to get it across the line and lift the trophy, but hopefully it continues to light a fire underneath them. But yeah, we're going to dive into some mid-season awards, some mid-season storylines here with the Vancouver Whitecaps, which is always fun. No disrespect to the Colorado Rapids, but we're going to kind of bypass that one and just dive straight into it here. So we've got a good list of awards and topics, and we're just going to go straight through it, Alex, as you said, and then we'll talk a little bit of League One BC on the back end. All right, well, let's just kick it right off, Alex. And a good place to start is the best of the best. The best performer or best performers of the first half of 2023 for the Vancouver Whitecaps. And I mean, this is the midway point in the MLS season, but obviously the Vancouver Whitecaps have played multiple competitions. So we're including CONCACAF Champions League performance, Canadian Championship performance, you know, it's all part and parcel of the first half of the season, even though I guess if you add those competitions in, we're more than halfway through. But yeah, best performers. I said before the beginning of the season, I had Julian Gressel as the prospective MVP. I'm feeling pretty good about that right now. So I think if you just had to ask me to pick out one player, I would say Gressel, because he's provided a goal scoring threat. He's been the most dangerous man with the ball at his feet in terms of service, providing assists. He's been really good defensively in a midfield role, which I think was a little bit unexpected. I don't know if all of us saw the transition to the number 8 working as well as it has. So really not a lot of complaints there. For my mind, at least, I would say Yoi Takaoka and then Tristan Blackman would be like the next two in terms of honorable mentions, runners up for the best performer so far. And then Ryan Gauld is obviously a guy who I feel like has been trending the last two or three weeks. It was an up and down start to the year. The actual goal scoring and assisting, you know, the raw numbers in terms of what he'd actually racked up weren't there. His chance creation was great, but he wasn't finding a way to convert it. So that's certainly a guy I could see by the end of the season leapfrogging everyone else. And Ryan Gauld could be the, you know, if this Whitecaps team gets the third, fourth in the West and is looking really good for a home playoff date, I think Ryan Gauld could be the big reason why. But yeah, for right now, I'm going to take Julian Gressel as my top performer of the first half with Takaoka and Blackman as my honorable mentions. But watch out for Ryan Gauld in the second.
Yeah, it's a lot of good choices in terms of best performers, and it kind of shows where the Whitecaps are at, that you could make good arguments across the board, right, in terms of where players are stepping up. I think Takaoka very well has to be in the discussion, given, you know, the Whitecaps defense hasn't been, you know, it's been average by MLS numbers. So the fact that Takaoka has come in and cleaned things up and performed above expected when we said last season they just needed an average keeper. So the fact that an above average one has come in and surprised at a very good ticket as well. But I mean, I feel like Takaoka, well, he'll certainly get a shout for some other awards and in terms of the midseason point. But I'd probably have to agree with Gressel just in terms of the overall output. He's just been fantastic on the ball and has just kind of made this attack tick, which has been huge for Ryan Gauld, who's kind of been able to find his feet. Now it's scary to think that all of a sudden, of course, the next month's not the best time for it with the Gold Cup permutations and, you know, Gressel being gone with the U.S. men's national team, which is great for him and well-deserved because he's been so darn good for the Whitecaps that he's deserved it. But, you know, I think the fact that you can have Gressel, Vite, Gauld all creating chances, it's, you know, it's so different for the Whitecaps, where before it was, where are the chances going to come from? And then Ryan Gauld came in. Okay, it's all on Ryan Gauld's shoulders. And now it's you have a team where it doesn't have to go all through Gauld. And I think that's just huge because, look, Gauld is human. He's going to have quiet days. But, you know, it is nice to have those not having those expectations all placed on him. And it can almost allow him to thrive. So I think it's Julian Gressel today. But also, if we're projecting the end of the year, I think it will probably ultimately be Gauld. But the fact that you have this discussion, it just shows how far the Whitecaps have come and part of the reason why they've been doing so well.
Yeah, I think what a great problem to have, right? I mean, you were talking about before the show, you're looking back through some of this and it's like, oh yeah, you know, Freddie Montero, Vancouver Whitecaps MVP. We had, you know, Ali Adnan, Vancouver Whitecaps MVP, Lucas Cavalier. Like, you were kind of, I mean, those are all very good players in their own right. Don't get me wrong, but there were times doing this show or just writing about the team where you felt like you were sort of scraping for, all right, who can we make a convincing case to be a most valuable player? And it doesn't feel that way at all. I think that, you know, Takaoka, Gauld, Gressel, Blackman, some, you know, a guy like Pedro Vite in the second half, if he heats up, all very reasonable, perfectly imaginable candidates to be a standout. So yeah, great problem to have. But speaking, Alex, of maybe some less great problems to have, we're just going to flip it right in its head and we're going to do most disappointing player so far from the first half of the season. And this one's funny because it was so obvious that I like almost tried to overlook it. I mean, it's Sergio Cordova without a doubt, right?
Yeah.
But I almost want to go past that because I think that one's like, you know, that just sitting there on a tee. So with my honorable mentions, I'm just trying to think of, I would say Alessandro Schopf. Now, part of this is, I mean, it's injury. So, you know, it's hard to get a great evaluation of a player who's not around a bunch. He did have some good matches early in the season. And when him with Kubas and Gressel, they were kind of rolling and dominating the midfield. He did have some really good matches, but I think just this was a guy you brought in from Europe, and I think you thought was going to be plug and play week to week, and that just hasn't been the case yet. So I do think that's disappointing. I don't think that means Schaap's a poor player or doesn't have the potential to step in and be really meaningful in the second half. It just hasn't happened yet. And then, you know, I think I'm gonna make my second honorable mention a position group, which is just the fullbacks. I think, you know, Luis Martins had some flashes at the end of the last season. The Whitecaps kind of took a bet on that. It's been okay at times, but it hasn't been great. Ryan Raposo had a breakout season last year, and he's been in and out of the lineup, had some bad defensive performances. You would have loved to see another big step forward this season, and that hasn't happened. And then the rest of it's just kind of been, you know, question mark, minefield. Christian Gutierrez leaving the squad. You didn't bring Marcus Cedinho back. It's felt like the positions lacked identity. And so that's just kind of to me, that's something that's been disappointing about this season. So it's hard to single out one guy because no one's really been consistent enough there, but I'll go, honorable mentions to the fullbacks. And then the final question that we're kind of doing is who's going to be the most disappointing at the end of the year, make a projection. And I mean, Sergio Cordova is going to have to score a lot of goals to get out of the hole here. So I think it's going to be Sergio Cordova, unfortunately.
You see, I'm going to go for a bit of a different avenue for this most disappointing, because it's tough. I mean, it is the Cordova award. Let's not kid ourselves. But look, the thing is with Cordova and even Schaap to an extent, it's tough because it's like, obviously they haven't performed, and with them, they've got the tags of, you know, expectations of pedigree, of salary, most importantly. But like, look, the Whitecaps have been able to get away with it. Schaap not playing as well as meant, and his injuries has meant discovering Ali Ahmed's a pretty darn good number eight, and has allowed also setups where Ryan Gaul drops a little deeper and you get, you know, a bit more of an attacking lineup. You know, Cordova not scoring great, while White's actually having a pretty darn good season. You kind of almost forget, like, Cordova figuring it out is a luxury. You're like, oh, if he can figure it out, it's fun. I think the big disappointment has really been the fullbacks. And I'd specifically probably highlight someone like a Luis Martins, just because, look, Javane Brown, he was drafted. He's been in the system for a while. You kind of know what Javane Brown is, but there is still a bit of, you know, as wild as it is to say, there still is a bit of an upside. I think there's a reason why, you know, according to the Athletic, teams in Europe are looking at him for multi-million dollars. He's getting calls to the Jamaica national team, and there's a chance he starts at the Gold Cup. You know, it could be Javane Brown, and in front of him, it's Leon Bailey and Damari Gray. Javane Brown's still on the field. He played against Messi last year, you know, for Jamaica. Like, he's a trusted player, and I think we know what he is in the terms of his frustration, but there's been at least enough upside and enough performances, and he's, you know, he's the draft pick. For me, it's just, it has to be Luis Martins, in the sense that this is a move that was made last year, and you had a chance. You kind of knew what system you're going to play, because Javane Brown was kind of drafted before Vanni Sartini comes in, right? He's someone where you could argue he just doesn't really fit what Sartini wants, where he's going up and down the field so much. You can only wonder what Javane Brown could do if he was focusing a bit more on offense or the other, right? The fact that Vanni Sartini, you know, was there and knew the system, and they signed someone like Luis Martins, who just hasn't fit the system and has been a big, you know, defensive liability, I think that's been a huge loss, and it's hurt the Whitecaps in key games, you know, whereas the Cordova, the Schaap's, the, you know, I guess Brown, it maybe is a little less, those guys haven't really been the reason why the Whitecaps haven't been winning, whereas it feels like there's too many games where the Whitecaps got overrun at fullback, and that kind of falls on Brown and Martins. But then in the case of Martins, like, the Whitecaps had a chance to sign him last year. They spent a hefty amount of salary. You just look around and wonder what they could have got for that instead. And, you know, some of the other options, I think that's just been the most disappointing in that regard. So I'd give a shout to that. I think credit has to be given to Martins, because he's played really well as of late. He's kind of shown a bit more upside, especially on the ball. But I think the big, you know, especially defensively, and, you know, the fact over a year, we haven't seen as much given the amount of minutes he's seen, you know, someone like Ryan Raposo, certainly, you know, he's not a perfect player by any means, but he's, you know, got that upside. And the fact that Martins has also been eating minutes away from a Raposo, He was eating minutes away from an Ahmed. Of course, that was a blessing because maybe you don't discover Ahmed as a midfielder, but there's just so much that the Martin signing has kind of impeded as well that, you would have liked a little more there.
Well, I'll just add here because it's one of these things where your perception and the reality sometimes don't match up. I didn't realize until I just looked at it right now that Luis Martins has played over 1,100 minutes so far. And I'm pretty sure this is just MLS on FBref. It doesn't include other competitions. And Ryan Raposo has only played 388 minutes. I didn't realize the disparity was actually, I thought it was more like 66-33%. And the reality is far more stark than that. So I think that really echoes in, puts in bold your point that that's taking away opportunities from a guy that had a breakout year last year. And, maybe not. Martins, to his credit, has been better in recent weeks, but I think that's a good show.
Yeah, that's it. Look, to say he's found his feet as of late. And if he can keep that up, he'll certainly, if we're looking in the back half of the season, he can definitely move off this list and, really cemented as Cordoba's. But I just think because it feels like the Whitecaps, their finishing has let them down in a lot of games. But much of that isn't on Cordoba as well, because like Cordoba wasn't healthy for that minute. A lot of that did fall on Brian White, but he found his goals and he's kind of rolling again. It really, there was just some key games early in the season. Yes, they weren't scoring, but some of the goals they were giving away from wide areas, if they could have tightened that up, it's a whole different story. And there's lots of discussion to be had on all of them. So it'll be interesting to see how the back half of the season finishes, especially that Martins is trending that way. But I think overall, if we're looking from the first 17 games, he's my pick. But on that note, we'll go to a fun choice.
I was going to say just to round it out. So do you have a couple honorable mentions, runners up, and or who you're expecting at the end of the season?
Well, that's pretty much, I pretty much would say just I'd echo your runner ups.
Okay.
There's, for the most part, again, a good season. No one's been disappointing. Say, I guess the only disappointment is that we haven't seen more of Thomas Asal and Karifa Yao. And, again, they haven't taken their opportunities.
So I would just say those two guys, the expectations weren't high enough to really be all that disappointing. I think it's one of those, you would have loved to see it. Like if Karifa Yao could have stepped up and been a regular contributor, fantastic. But I wasn't hinging early season expectations on something like that happening. So those guys get a pass, at least in my mind.
Oh, they do. They get a pass. I'd say it's what's disappointing is more how they've been handled. I'd say if we're going, and it just feels like it feels like there could have been a bit more there than what we've seen. And it's just unfortunate. We're sitting here talking about a Hassal loan and Yao getting minutes with the second team when it feels like there could have been a bit more. But really, other than that, like most players in the roster have been hitting, have been doing their job across the board. And in terms of, the projection, that's what I'd say. This is Cordova's award to lose. Really, Martins, if he trends this way, will be fine. But that's why I just say over the first half, that's the kind of the way it's been leaning. But on that note, we'll go to the fun award, the award we're known for. The aptly renamed and fittingly renamed to the legend, the man, the myth, the legend, the Ta St. Ricketts third sub of the year award. It's an important award because look, subs can win games, right? The right substitution in moments can help you stem a, terrible tide. It can help you get momentum. It can help you close out a game. And that's why we have the third sub as a website and a show now. Like the subs mean a lot when you don't use them and they mean a lot when you use them. So this award does mean a lot. So Sam, who's kind of leading your race right now in the St. Ricketts third sub of the year? I mean, it feels like there's one name, someone who's kind of followed in the footsteps of St. Ricketts, maybe his replacement, you could argue, but some good options.
Well, I think this one's interesting. It's actually, when you consider like the last month or so, it's not as clear as it seemed before, because I think to this point in the season, it's Simon Betcher, right? Like considering the amount of minutes played, the goals scored, the way he started his MLS career, it's hard to go with anyone else, but he hasn't been as impactful in recent weeks. So that shine has faded just a little bit. Ali Ahmed is an interesting one because he started coming off the bench, but really prior to injury had emerged as more of a starter than a sub. So almost not sure if he will qualify for that award come season end, because he might be a day in, day out starter for Vancouver. Someone to watch as an honorable mention, not from the first half, but I think someone I'm kind of, we're going to be monitoring the situation as the season goes on, is Deber Caicedo, because I'm not quite sure how he's going to fit into the day-to-day starting 11, but could absolutely be a threat off the bench and has looked better in the last couple of matches, kind of more back to what we were used to seeing prior to the injury. So yeah, Simon Betcher so far, Ali Ahmed, honorable mention. And I guess, I mean, you could throw in Ryan Raposo. You could throw in, I know the minutes are incredibly limited, but throw in Lavonte Johnson is like another honorable mention. And then I think Deber Caicedo is maybe someone to watch out for come season's end. I'm not guaranteeing that. But yeah, I think Ahmed's likely to be a regular starter, honestly, if he can continue his form and pick up from after this injury. And I do wonder whether Simon Betcher's goal scoring impact will continue. So it's going to be, I think this end of the season, it'll be a really, really interesting award to hand out. But for right now, Betcher just gets it for, you know, the kind of miracle run he had to start his MLS career.
Yeah, I feel bad for Raposo, man. I thought he'd graduated. He won this award like three times or twice or whatever it was. And, so, you know, he gets his starting role last year. And I mean, obviously it's the mid-season point, so you're not giving out any awards, but the fact he's still even in this discussion, you gotta graduate this guy. You gotta get him into that starting category, but it has to be Simon Betcher by a runaway. I just find it wild that he's second on the team in goals, more than, you know, the likes of Cordova, et cetera. He is 17th on the team or 16th on the team in outfield minutes in MLS or no, in all minutes, because he counts Takoka. That is absurd. The fact that he has not been able to leverage that in the more. He's got four goals in 450 minutes. You add in the goals in the Canadian Championship and CONCACAF, it's even better of a ratio, because he also hardly started some of those games. Like, credit where credit is due. I think it's seven goals on the season, because he has two in the CAN Champ and one in the CONCACAF Champions League, as it was formerly known. So I think it has to be Betcher. The Ahmed shout's fair, because I think it's something where he's similar minutes due to the injury, but it did feel like he graduated to a starting, like he was getting those 45 60s as a starter, especially in other competitions. So the other shout I'll give, and this one could be a bit of a, you know, an interesting one, and it makes sense because given who he's going up against, but Sebastian Berhalter, I feel like he's someone who's really stepped up this season. He's been such a great, you know, he's really stepped up defensively. Like we've talked, like he, you can tell he's bulked up. He's so much more solid in duels. He's learned a lot from some of those naive moments he maybe had tactically last season. And he's just been so good that you can start him in games if you need be, but he's come off the bench a lot and cleaned up games. Or if Kubas is looking a bit tired, he can step in, but you can also pair him in with Kubas and muck the game up. And I think, you know, I just found it wild that I felt like we've seen so much of Berhalter and so much good of Berhalter, and he's, you know, literally only 30 minutes ahead of Simon Betcher in terms of minutes on the in MLS play, that is. So I feel like Berhalter is someone we're also sleeping on. So if I'm projecting towards the end of the year, I think it could be a very good race between Berhalter and Betcher, because Betcher can chip in with those goals. But for Berhalter, if he can keep Kubas fresh and step in key moments and help the Whitecaps clean up games, especially maybe on the road, if they're ever up a goal or two, throw Berhalter on, because there's been a few times where the Whitecaps have blown leads on the road. Maybe, you know, a guy like Berhalter, his stock could be rising. It could win this award at the end of the year.
Certainly, if the Whitecaps experiment and consider in-match switches to that different defensive shape with Kubas and Berhalter together, kind of protecting the back line, I could see a big impact. And, you know, especially if the Whitecaps actually have the lead in some matches on the road and are trying to close out for victories, I feel like he's got a real role to play. Obviously, you know, we got to get a W over the line first on the road before we start talking about those kinds of strategies. But you know how big of a Seb Berhalter fan I am, so I love that.
Had to throw it out there.
Absolutely. Okay, well, from the third sub, which is always a favorite, to another one we like to talk about, I'd like to think that this is part of the ethos of the third sub brand, the third sub podcast, is unsung heroes, right? Like the people that don't that don't get the credit. And I'm almost a little bit ashamed, Alex. I mean, I think there were a lot of good best performer candidates, but to me, you know, he shouldn't be unsung, but he is. It's Andres Kubas. It's just a guy that goes about his business. You don't really hear a heck of a lot, but makes a massive impact on the team. And so, yeah, I think, you know, even I think the crazy thing is that for Kubas, this probably hasn't been like an amazing season so far. There's been a little bit of inconsistency there for his standards. And I have to feel like as the defensive structure improves, as they've kind of ironed out some of their niggling issues, I think less stress will be put on Kubas. There were times we've talked about where, you know, okay, we're going to push Alessandro Schopf and Julian Gressel forward. Our fullbacks are pushed forward. It's Kubas. It's basically you and the two center backs. Good luck. Hope you can defend against five or six attacking players on the other team. 85, 90% of the time, he's been able to absorb that pressure and win the ball back. And every once in a while, it doesn't work out. So, I think that he's bound to continue this form. I mean, I think he's, you know, his praises are sung in certain little chambers of Whitecaps fandom, but I don't know if he gets the widespread recognition he really should. To me, Seb Berhalter would be a candidate for unsung early in the season. You just made a very good case for why his contributions have been underrated. And then if I have to think of a third one, I mean, honestly, I'm going to say Brian White, because he took a lot of heat early in the season for not finding the back of the net, for, you know, where are the goal contributions, where's his finishing, but he continued to do all that diligent off-ball work, all the hold-up play that the Whitecaps really needed to create all those chances, the hold-up play they needed to get Pedro Vite and Ryan Gault going, and I think you felt that impact a lot recently. You could see that Gault and Vite were buzzing when White was in the lineup, and when it was Cordova, it was Betcher. It just wasn't quite the same. They didn't have that same ingredient. So I guess those are some bigger names really in Brian White and Andres Kubas for unsung. But I think, you know, in the case of Kubas, maybe not receiving as much praise as he should. In the case of Brian White, especially early in the year, being criticized, I think, a little bit unfairly. And he's really sort of rose above a lot of that and, you know, found his goal scoring feat here recently.
Yeah, it has to be Kubas for me, just because I spent all this time saying how he's the Whitecaps' most important players, and I forget to shout him out in the best performers. It kind of just shows that he goes about his business and dominates games in such a quiet way that I think it shows. Like, if the Whitecaps, you know, knock on wood, but if they were to lose him, like, he would be a bigger loss than a guy like a Ryan Gault and, you know, some of the other guys, even the guys like a Julian Gressel, etc. So I think Kubas has to absolutely be unsung. I'd say I love the White shout, just because he's really quietly put it all together, and it feels like still there's been a lot of carryover of, oh, White can't finish chances, the Whitecaps need to upgrade at striker, yada, yada, yada. I think two other names maybe that you could look at, especially after how the season started, I think Ranko Veselinovic is really coming to his own as of late after a rough stretch. Like, there was points where we were sitting here thinking, like, could it be worth the shakeup at the back? Could Ranko be one to get a bit of a reset? And I feel like he's responded well and has stepped up and just brought a little stability back there. Obviously, the Whitecaps, again, like we mentioned, they're not the, you know, defensive world beaters, but they're not a bad defensive team anymore, really. They're just average, and at times they've been above average. And I think Veselinovic played a big part of that. And by extension, I'd have to give a shout to Tristan Blackman, because he just goes about his business so effectively, and he feels like he's been... he can just dominate games. Like, Ranko at his best, he doesn't dominate games, but he goes about business the right way, which is what you want from center backs. But Blackman also has this way of, like, hitting this dominant level where he just wins everything, and you notice him, like, oh, whoa, like, what's going on back here? And I think those are the kind of attributes you want from your center back. So the fact that the Whitecaps have been able to finally find some stability between the pair, and they kind of complement each other in that way, where Ranko does a lot of the quiet work and then Blackman does kind of a lot of the loud work, I think that's been a very unsung pair. And it's worth talking about, because how many times do we sit here ranting and raving about Whitecaps can't defend this or what's going on at center back? That stability is very underrated, and I feel like it hasn't been very sung.
No, absolutely. I mean, that Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that. And that pretty much goes straight into the next award, which is most improved. Now, this one's funny because it's actually kind of hard to pick out like players that have taken a massive leap, because I'm gonna at least categorize this for myself as players who were on the first team last season. So I'm not gonna say Ali Ahmed because he was playing for Whitecaps FC2, and so it's kind of a different thing, and I think that would be a little bit obvious. So I'm gonna say Tristan Blackman, because I think he just took a massive step forward. He's now, Vanni Sartini has said, all right, you're in our system, you're gonna be a full-time center back. This is the role you're playing. You're gonna pair with Ranko, you're gonna build this chemistry. And it was a little rough early in the season when they were just hemorrhaging set pieces. But since then, it's been really, really good. As you said, it's kind of Beauty and the Beast a little bit at the back there, where Ranko is just always in the right position. He does the little things off ball, and Tristan Blackman can, get his elbows out and bully a little bit when he needs to. And he continues to be really smooth on the ball. He's a heading threat on Vancouver's own set pieces. It's a lot of good stuff from the young American. And I mean, what a great pickup that was for Vancouver to utilize the expansion draft, kind of weaponize that mechanism and get a reliable domestic starting center back in MLS for next to nothing. That was, the Whitecaps made a lot of inefficient moves, but I think they do deserve credit. That was a really tidy bit of business. So he's going to be my first half most improved player. I mean, elsewhere through the squad, it's kind of, I mean, you can say Simon Betcher, but I'm not really going to go with that. Seb Berhalter, we already talked about a lot, so I'm not going to say any more, but I think Berhalter's a good honorable mention in that category. But beyond that, this was funny. Like the Whitecaps are a good team, and yet it doesn't feel like any one player's like taken this massive step forward. It's just like a better constructed roster and everyone performing at a decently high level.
I'm going to go a bit of a different route. I'm going to go Pedro Vite, because I feel like he's someone who, yes, he had that run of games at the end of last year where he kind of showed you a glimpse. But I just think if you look at where he was a year ago now, where I think he was in the second team, like he was fighting just to get minutes. Like he was so far off the first team. You hear
It's a
about the
great point.
defensive
It's so
effort.
easy to forget that he was, almost like out of the squad a year ago. That's a fantastic point.
And like you ask Vanny about it, he's like, oh, he just needs to work on his intensity and his defensive work rate. And I just look at how much he's changed as a player. Like he's someone who's reliably stepped in at the six this year if need be, because he's pressing, he's always running, he's just doing all those things you need to do off the ball. But then on the ball, like him and Ryan Gold, when they click, they're on the same level. Like it's wild to say, like, but genuinely when Vite's been clicking, him and like Gressel are arguably the only guys, and guess White just because of chemistry, that are can only play on the same level as Gold. And I guess you could probably throw Ali Ahmed is there into there as well, and that helps, because it felt at times before where it was kind of just Gold and White, and then other people like almost not understand what wavelength Gold is on. And the fact that these guys have stepped up, in Vite in particular, like some of the 1-2 combos they play and the intricacies, it's just given the Whitecaps another dimension. And I think it's fascinating to see now that like he's legitimately got called up to the Ecuadorian national team. Like this is a national team that was at the World Cup 6 months ago, did very well, is young, and Vite is seen in their plans for 2026. Just shows how far he's come, and it shows like what player the Whitecaps have. And it feels like what's like the painful side of this is it feels like we might not be seeing him for much longer for the Whitecaps. Like it just feels like at this point, by the end of the season, if you tell me a European team comes in for him, I wouldn't be surprised. If not, by the very least, by next year, there's a Copa America. Maybe he does well in there and gets a move. So it shows how quickly he's come on to the scene over the last year. And I just love him because the talent was already there. Like you could see the natural raw skill, but the work rate's there now, the defensive ability's there, and now there's just he's showing that talent. He's expressing as himself. He's shooting the ball more. He's making those more dangerous passes. He's dribbling, and there's a confidence of I know I can do this, and I will do that. And sometimes it's tough for those skilled players to find that, and it felt like he was struggling to. And I think it's just given the Whitecaps so much of a different dimension in the attack where they don't have to run everything through Gaul. There can be a bit of an interplay. And it's just wild to think the Whitecaps, again, used to never have a 10, and now they have two of them in Vitae and Gaul, and then Gressel as well creating. Like, it just shows you how far they've come, and credit has to be given to Vitae for the step he's taken forward. And I'd say at the end of the year, he would be one of my shouts to win it between him and Blackman.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. That's one where I think even following the team so closely, it's almost easy to get a little caught up in recency bias. And I guess a bit of what underlines like my overlooking Vitae in that category is I think even when he was struggling last season, you knew what was there, like the quality of, you knew that this player was there the whole time. It was just a matter of sort of getting that out of him. So maybe I've kind of, I took
defense.
Yeah.
We knew the attack was there. The work rate and the defense, I've been very like quietly impressed by that. I'll say that much.
I think it's just, I don't know. With Pedro, it's like, there seems to be very little that he's incapable of doing. It's just like a matter of mentality and like wanting to do it. So I think if you find a way to get Pedro to want to defend, then like no problem. It's just you gotta get him in that mind frame, and it seems like Vanni Sartini, after a bit of a slow start, I've questioned Vanny in terms of his dealing with some other players. You look at Kyle Alexandre, you look at Christian Gutierrez, where those relationships really soured, never recovered. Full credit with Pedro Vitae, it was a tough start, it was some tough love, but it seems like they found a mutual footing there, and Pedro's really taken some steps forward. So I think that's a great one to bring up. And, we were talking about you're mentioning arrivals and departures, Alex, who could be on the way in, who could be on the way out. And that's the subject of the next couple categories. We're going to start with arrivals first. So who's the best arrival of the offseason? This list is a little more limited than most seasons. The Whitecaps really didn't bring in that many players, but I do think ultimately this one is very easy. It's Yoey Takaoka. Without a doubt, he's come in. He's been the exact type of keeper the Whitecaps have wanted, the Whitecaps were looking for. It's provided stability to a position that ever since Max Kripo did the heel turn and went to LAFC has been tumultuous, has been unpredictable, has been annoying, frankly, for the Whitecaps to deal with, and they were able to sort it out. I think if you'd asked us at the start of the year, we probably would have thought that Matias Laborda would be right there behind Takaoka as a big impact addition. That hasn't really happened yet. And then obviously Sergio Cordova, we've already mentioned, is one of the most disappointing. So obviously that hasn't been great so far. And come the end of the season, I think that, if it wasn't relatively clear, I think that will continue. Takaoka will be the best arrival of 2023. But I hope that Laborda pushes his way up there and becomes a little more in the race because, we just haven't seen much of him.
Yeah, and I like what I see at center back when we get those glimpses. So it's like, I don't know, maybe the plan is to move on one of these two center backs at the end of the year and then really allow Laborda to go next year and go off, and hopefully. But yeah, because of that, I think this is Takoka's award now, and it's his to lose. He should win it. The only really way I could see him threatening him is if there's an injury at the back line. Of course, knock on wood, you don't want that. And Laborda steps up, or if you count Ali Ahmed in this category, because he did sign a homegrown deal over the offseason, but I don't really count that. It's not like a proper arrival. So yeah, this really Takoka's award to win, and credit to, the Whitecaps for identifying, again, maybe not a bit of a sexy market in terms of what MLS has been loving, which is Argentina and South America. They go to Japan and it paid off. Like, I don't know why more teams aren't looking at Japan. Like, they're, even South Korea to an extension as well. Both of those countries are popping off internationally. Players are quietly going to Europe by the truckloads. So it's like, why not intercept some of them and bring them to North America? And just look at like Takaoka, 200K a year. Like, you're not like, the thing is with South Americans, like, they know how good they are. You have to pay these $10, $15 million.
Takaoka needs a better agent. Like, that's criminal.
It is. And then it just shows that it's such an undervalued market. So Takaoka, just immense value there. And show that, like, yeah, go sign some. If you need some players, like, the Japanese and South Korean market right now is just incredible value, incredible. And I think it's great as well. And there's benefit, because Takoka has mentioned now that, like, he's pushing to be on the Japan national team. And he legitimately has improved his stock and has a chance due to his play with the Whitecaps. So maybe there's a few other young Japanese players, even players are kind of like him, are 23, 24, 25, you know, maybe not the U21 players that are going to be going to Europe for high fees, but those you could kind of swoop in and get a few good years out of and go from there. So I just love the piece of business when it happened. And I just love that maybe after a bit of an adjustment period, it quickly taken hold in a dominant way at times in goal. But we'll save time on the best arrival, because, I mean, again, there's so little to talk about. But this one's a bit of a fun one on the flip side. It could happen as soon as next week or in 10 days when the transfer windows start to open, and it can happen at the end of the season. Who is the most likely to be sold? And I think it's a question that we'll specify by saying it's sold for a fee, someone that goes abroad. You know, it's not saying, like, if someone is going to get traded, that counts, really, because it's more like, in that case, it feels like you're more offloading. We're saying someone that is going to get sold, and that's because you got an offer that you don't want to get rid of the player, but it's business. You have to. You know, it's guys like a Davies. Would you love to have kept Alphonso Davies in a Whitecap shirt for 20 years? Of course you darn would. But when, you know, bigger leagues, bigger money pools come calling, you have to sell. So most likely to be sold, it's, you know, an interesting mix of guys. There's Whitecaps teams in their prime, so there's maybe not as many who have that upside, but there's still a few names you could look at.
Yeah, absolutely. This one has changed a little bit recently, because all of a sudden there's this smoke around Jermaine Brown that I wasn't necessarily anticipating. So I don't know if he would have been at the top of my list a couple of weeks ago, but he's up there near the top right now. That being said, I'm still going to go with the guy that I just think is, like, most primed for a move based on position, age, amount of time he spent in MLS, overall performance, all these factors. I think it's Ranko Veselinovic, right? Like, if he's going to take the next step personally, and you know, vault himself forward into being part of the national team picture long term, you know, just if he has that ambition now or at the end of this season, at the very latest, honestly, like, I honestly can't see Ranko coming back and being in Vancouver again next season unless he decides that he wants to stay in MLS permanent. So that's the one to me where I feel like there's a bit of urgency there on the player side. If he wants to take that next step, it needs to happen soon. So I think that would be my strongest candidate. Honorable mention, Jermaine Brown. And then I think Pedro Vite probably next in line, but honestly, like, Andres Kubas is another one where certainly some teams could come knocking. I wonder where the player's mentality is there. Like, he was already in France, so I don't know if Kubas is necessarily itching to go back to Europe or if he's happy to be here in MLS. But yeah, to me, Ranko is the one that feels the most imminent in terms of the situation, outside of any rumors or anything like that. And then Brown and Vite. But really, yeah, Veselinovic and Vite are sort of top of my mind in terms of those situations.
Yeah, I think Veselinovic is such a great shout, and it's important to remember he only just turned 24. And that feels absurd to me that he is, like, so, like, he is just, like, for context, like, you look elsewhere on the Whitecaps.
That's, like, what teams in Europe will be looking at too, like, the amount of center back experience he's had at that age, the upside that's still there, and the performances that they will have already seen at the MLS level. Like, I think that's a pretty attractive profile. And they also probably, you know, teams in Europe have to look at Whitecaps tape and think, oh, well, some of the things we don't like about his game, we get him in with our coaching system, our tactical know-how, and we can round out some areas of his game as well. I'm sure clubs will be thinking.
Yeah. And I mean, look, like, Blackman, you feel like he's a young center back. He's 26. He's 2 full years older than Ranko. Jermaine Brown burst onto the scene over the last couple of years. Ranko is younger than Jermaine Brown. Like, I'm just going through the list here. Like, a guy like, you know, Matias Laborda, who's a young center back brought out a year ago, a similar mold. He's less than a year younger than Ranko is. Laborda is 23 and a bit, and Ranko freshly turned 24 in March. Like, he's the same age as Ryan Raposo as well. Like, he is super young. This is his seventh pro season, fourth season in MLS. He's just been, you know, improved his game over the year. I love the show, and it's one that's very underrated. If not for me, it's Vite, because I just think the fact that Vite is already getting that Ecuador interest, he's just turned 21, and he's been playing professionally for a couple seasons. He's just got that je ne sais quoi, that X factor. You know, I think he's someone that teams could look at and will throw good hunks of money. So that Vite feels like one that as well. It feels like it's a race between Ranko and Vite, because Vite feels like one that's a sure bet. Like, it's an attacker, plays on the Ecuador national team, young. Like, he'll one he'll definitely get sold. And I think Ranko as well will definitely get sold, but it might be a bit of a different market, right? Like, it's a center back. 24, still super young for a center back. But, you know, the market moves differently for those kinds of things. So I really will just depend on what domino falls first. But I definitely think it's between those two. If we're talking about an outside shot amongst the roster, I think it kind of has to be Ali Ahmed. Just partly because, yeah, he's only burst on the scene relatively, but he's already getting Canada men's national team interest. We know that playing on a national team always elevates your profile. The fact that he's positionally versatile, you know, managers will see, oh, can play eight, can play fullback, you know, never a bad profile to have. He's had trials in Europe before, so he's had that experience. I think it's something where I'm not saying it's this season set. I'd say definitely finish the season with Vancouver and arguably, you know, has another season in him next year. But it feels like someone where, especially if he turns this Gold Cup into more with the national team, because the midfield depth isn't, you know, fully there, and he could easily have a spot on the team in the squad, like the main squad, by the end of the year. Like, it's not wild to say. Then all of a sudden, then we could be talking about something very different in a year's time. So I'd say Ahmed's a very sneaky dark horse. So I don't think it happens this year, but he could very much be in that discussion and is someone to watch, you know, longer term.
Yeah. Initially, when you said that, I'm kind of like, eh. And then I was like, wait, Ismael Kone, Tejon Buchanan. Things can change.
Very similar ages.
Things can change. Like, took a while to emerge at the pro level, get their shot in MLS, get a little bit of traction, get some national team traction. Alistair
Johnston.
Continue to blow up in MLS. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, yeah, big, big move. So actually, that fits the format. So I think that's a really good shout. But yeah, initially it was kind of like, oh, well, you know, Ahmed just made it up to the first team. Let's slow our roll. But you know what? No, like, this is something that's happened several times. And if he gets into that camo fold and shows well, things can start to move very quickly. So I like that one, actually. That really makes you think.
Well, that's why I'd say it's one where it has to be like the national team really accelerates it. But Johnson was in MLS for three full seasons. That's a bit of a different, but still, like, you know, burst on the, but within a year of joining the national team, he's in Europe. Tejon Buchanan he was there for like three seasons, but really one big season, he was gone. He's kind of on that national team. You mentioned Ismael Kone, one good season, and, you know, obviously a bit younger, but a midfielder, unique profile. Ahmed does have a bit of a unique profile, so, you know, that might push a team to take more of a look. It's something, again, where it's important to say, like, I don't think it happens this year, but it's something where, look, if he has a great 17 games, they make the playoffs, maybe they do well in Leagues Cup, where, you know, they're going up against Liga MX teams. Although, as we've said in the past, we don't think the Whitecaps will go full strength for Leagues Cup. You know, he does well for Canada. It's something where it can change quickly. So it's just a fun name to throw in the hat to be one. Like, okay, like, don't be surprised
and
if
I think
it does happen.
What I'm starting to think now is, you know, you can put it this way, where when we meet again in the podcast world to discuss this in a year's time, and Ali Ahmed has 5 goals and 5 assists halfway through the MLS season, it might be like, okay, he's looking at a big summer move. You know, if he finishes this season well, he's off to a red hot start in 2024, and it's like, okay, this guy's ready for the next step. And I don't think that's a far-fetched proposition at all.
And yeah, and like for all you know, maybe he's in the national team fold. Because again, for the midfield one, I'll say Canada's midfield is wide open. Why do you think Aiden Morris was such a fascinating name to come out of nowhere and then eventually go to the U.S.? Like right now, it's Eustachio, it's Kone, and after that, it's wide open. Azorio just turned 31. You know, Junior Hoilett's in his 30s. Marc-Anthony Kay is not getting calls right now. You know, it's Atiba Hutchinson just retired. David Weatherspoon as well is in his 30s. Victor Laturi, he's someone to watch. He's just, you know, 21, 22. But he's also in that same area of like an Ahmed or a Mathieu Chouanier or some of these guys where they're all pushing in, they're on the cusp. And so it's really wide open to stake a claim. So that's why any Canadian midfielders right now, like this is the time to be a young Canadian midfielder to pop off. So maybe Vanny was onto something. Maybe he almost knew that. Cause Vanny always talks to John Herdman. Maybe there was some sort of, you know, conversation there. We're like, okay, maybe, you know, it could be help the player as well personally. So that's why I say watch out for a lot of those factors, especially over the next year. I think that's a good point. Like I could very well, this will be something to bookmark and remember in a year's time.
All right. Well, now we're on to an interesting category. This is one that has me a little bit puzzled almost because there's no clear-cut great candidate. It's the departure that's most missed. And I mean, we just kind of run down the list here. Christian Dahomey, obviously the most recent departure. Lucas Cavallini, maybe the most high profile departure. And then you look at positions of need, positions of want at the moment. Christian Gutierrez, Marcus Gudino, Jake Nowitzki, at least in some capacity. Is he a fullback? Is he a center back? The debate rages on. But man, Alex, this is the first category, honestly, where I'm really struggling to pick a clear-cut candidate. You know, because maybe after the first couple matches of the season, you're going, oh, we need a proven goal scorer like Lucas Cavallini. Or maybe you can even make an argument. I mean, personality-wise, salary-wise, it wouldn't have made sense. But, like, you know, gun to your head, would you rather have Lucas Cavallini or Sergio Cordova right now? I feel dirty saying it, but I kind of think he'd rather have Lucas Cavallini, right? But I'm not going to say he's most missed, right? Like that feels wrong. So we were kind of having some fun with this before the show. I'm going to say Marcus Gudino just because fullback's a position of the need. And I kind of feel like Marcus Gudino is the player that Vanni Sartini wants Luis Martins to be. You know, like that ooh, midfield-esque, okay. That midfield-esque profile, the wand of a foot crossing it into the box. The thing with Gudino is like he can take on players 1v1 on the dribble. He can really cut inside with a bit of threat. Now, like a Luis Martins, it's the defensive responsibility, the motor, the ability to stay fit. All these things are questions. And in that Christmas tree formation, still, this is not like really the profile of fullback you want. But I think if I look at any of the guys on the squad last year and I think about who I would be excited to see in this year's side, I think Gudino is one of the first names that comes to mind. But yeah, you're kind of scraping, looking around for a great candidate in this category, I have to say, which is honestly like that's good business from Vancouver. There isn't a guy that you gave away that you're like, oh, I wish we had. That's a good problem.
Can I like get creative with my answer and like combine two players? Because funnily enough, my choice.
There are no rules. You can do whatever you want.
Well, it's just funny because like now that I think about it, my choice on the opposite end of it is another fullback, but very different profiles from Gudino. Like Gudino is go forward. It was gung-ho. It's get things done in the final third. I'm going to go Jake Nowitzki just because I think it's something where the Whitecaps, how much have we talked about the Whitecaps defensively struggling at fullback? I think Nowitzki would, you know, it's someone where you get all the back post Jake memes, etc. I mean, you know, I think he's someone where he's a lot better 1v1 than you give him credit. Like he pocketed Lorenzo Insigne in last year's final. Like we joked about it happening and it genuinely went out and did in the Canadian Championship. Like, he was someone who was always good 1v1, closing down crosses, and those are just things that the Whitecaps have missed, and I think it's no coincidence that Nowitzki stepped immediately in a very good back line in St. Louis and has been indispensable. Like, he's gone so many 90s for them. I think he's one of their minutes leaders. if I'm not mistaken already. Like, I just wonder what that sort of defensive solidity could have done for them at that fullback position. So I'd go Nowinski because of all that we mentioned. And like, now that I think, I'm like, man, what if you had a hybrid of Nowinski and Godinho? Like a guy who, like Godinho, could just go forward and get the electric whip in those crosses, but had that 1v1 defending and, you know, the work rate to get back that Nowinski never lacked. So that's why my answer would be both, but I'll go Nowinski. Good. Maybe just the fact that you pick Godinho, I pick Nowinski, it shows that maybe a hybrid of those two is the dream answer.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think if you could have Jake just like focusing on defensive responsibility and Godinho's attacking threat, that would be ideal. I mean, but there's a reason those fullbacks aren't just readily available, right? Like this always seems to be a position in MLS where you pick someone domestic with a lot of flaws or some very obvious upsides and downsides, or you go out and spend big. And then usually that doesn't work because it's like not a great area of the squad to invest a ton of money. So fullback's an interesting one. I think you could write deep dives and in-depth think pieces on how the fullback position is used in MLS, because it's an interesting one. But okay, last couple categories here. And this one's always fun. Whitecaps FC 2, off to a good start to the season, lots of goals. Lots of exciting players. The consistency's maybe dropped off a little bit. They're not quite as red hot as they started the season, but nonetheless, I think a lot to be excited about. So this last category is WFC 2 player to watch from the first half. And I think if we're going to go someone that there's two ways you could go about it. If you could go like player to watch that's also played with the first team, it would be Levante Johnson. But if we're going to go WFC 2 player to watch that's only played with the second team, for me, it's going to be Antoine Coupland. Really nice add in the offseason. You know, didn't really cost the club anything. He's been that goal and assist threat, that distributor and creator at the MLS Next Pro level, still very young. A position where if someone like Pedro Vite gets a move to a bigger club, he could be poised to step in a couple seasons. So certainly I think the top guy to watch right now, given that Johnson's like already embedded to some degree in the first team. It's interesting. I will note, and this won't be news to anyone listening to the podcast, but Gio Aguilar has been called up to the first team, which is interesting because that makes me think that they're not giving Levante Johnson a first team deal right away, because otherwise why would they just finalize the deal with Johnson and bring him up? But I guess maybe they're thinking if they're trying to get some depth in for Ahmed when he's away at Gold Cup and they want it to be in the midfield.
And Tybert's injured. So they need midfielders.
Maybe that's the reason why. But anyways, we're a little bit off track. I'm going to say Coupland with Johnson as an honorable mention. And I think you can go probably Cam Habibula, Gloire Amanda as like your other honorable mentions from the second team. And we've chatted a bit about some exciting second team and academy players as the season has gone on.
Yeah, I think Coupland's the easy choice. 19, he has like a couple of years of pro experience already. He's kind of popped off. I think he kind of leads the way because it feels like there's two ways to look at it. Like there's just so many names in attacks. Kind of take your pick. Like it's Levante Johnson, who's been great. Yeah, a little older, but he's shown immediately that he's the level. He does a lot of the right things. So Johnson's in there. You know, Gloria Amanda as well, a little older, but he's had good flashes. Cam Habibula is already on a first team deal, but he's young and has that upside, and he's complimented Coupland well. And they've kind of had a, you know, Vite Gold kind of thing going on between Coupland and Habibula at the second team. You know, Joe Hansen as well, Yukon Joe, as they call him, which is actually a phenomenal nickname. Like there's options up front. That's why I'd echo your Coupland kind of leading the charge in that regard. But again, I threw the name out there last week and I think it just makes sense because every time I've watched him, he's got a wand of a left foot, and we always hear about how the Whitecaps want that left-footed left back, and he's super young, 18. We mentioned him recently, so it won't be any surprise. And I love to you know, expose myself with the pronunciation, but it's Mihail Gerasimenkov. I think it's someone where his rise is he was, you know, with the like U17s or U18s literally a year ago, and he's immediately stepped in the second team, has not looked out of place, been getting assists from left back. Like that's, we talk so much about the Whitecaps needing fullbacks and, you know, fullbacks who can get up the field. He's got that part down, and given that he's young and, you know, it's something where he could be molded into that, that role. So it's something just to watch as well long-term. Like, again, he's just 18 and, you know, fresh out of the academy into the second team. So it's not something where you're expecting a signing tomorrow, but it's something where maybe if he has a strong end of the year, the Whitecaps do well. It could be something where if you're looking to shore up that depth next year, it could be a cheap option worth signing. Cause we saw how cheap it is to sign those next pro players. And, you know, maybe he ends up being a backup where you send him down to the second team whenever the opportunity is there, and you kind of start to already, look up to the first team. So it's just an option, because the unfortunate thing about all the forwards is there's so many of them are doing great and there's just not that many spots, right? Like we've seen with Johnson, like he's going up already against White and Cordova and Betcher and, you know, Gold and Vite and Ditto with Kuplin, whereas that fullback with the problems and it being more wide open, there could be room for someone like, you know, Gerasimenkov to hop up.
No, absolutely. I think that's a great shout. And, you know, one thing I think that's just worth mentioning here, this is not necessarily on the show notes, but I think there's been a noticeable uptick in these WFC 2 players that look sort of ready and poised when they make a jump to the first team in any kind of level of contribution since Ricardo Clark has really been in charge of that second team and moved over from an assistant role. And I think that, you know, we're talking about 18 year olds coming up from the academy and, you know, looking to make the jump to pro football. And I think having someone who's played in the league recently, knows what's required, has that experience, has worked with the first team last season, like just has such a depth and breadth of experience. I think it just speaks volumes that guys like Levante Johnson have been able to come up, Simon Betcher, Ali Ahmed, and they're able to look like they belong and contribute reasonably quickly. And then just also the success the second team has had, relatively speaking, this season. I think that's not an accident. So I just wanted to give Clark a bit of a shout out, because it's not something we, you know, we think about all that often, but it is, it's an important part of the club's setup. So yeah, it's worth paying a little bit of attention to.
Yeah, and I hope they just use it wisely. Like, there's players coming up now. We've already seen Betcher and Ahmed make that jump. Johnson, there's a great one because you're able to take a punt on a guy in the draft and end up finding a bit of value there because you had that second team. So it's like now there hasn't been much room for a lot of these guys to jump up because, again, like we sing the praise of a Kuplan very early, of course, in his progression. And Habibullah is also another example, but there's Gold and Vite now, right? But I'm curious to see how this evolves as the Whitecaps hits the end of their cycle. Because look, that cycle is going to come. Guys like Vite are going to be sold to Europe. Ranko, you know, we mentioned maybe a guy like, you know, Takaoka, Gold over the next few years move on. Maybe Gressel moves on. Like, let's just to say, like, over the next 3 to 4 years, like, a lot of these players could end up leaving. Hopefully some of the second team is able to supply a lot of these replacements, especially for depth, right? Like, to start its depth and build up so that you're saving – bringing these players in internally so that you can, you know, you can only have to focus on making the home run swings, right? You only have to focus on your Gold and your Kubases, because it can be tough to find cheap depth without going to your academy. Now, I think you have deep academy. It makes so much of a difference. So hopefully we see a lot of these guys over the next few years as the Whitecaps hit a bit of a refresh. But all right, I think that pretty much sums up the individual talk for halfway point. I think it was good to kind of get a catch up of what's going on there. I think ultimately last question while we're on the Whitecaps halfway review, it's a bit of an important question. It's a good question to finish off. We spent all this time talking about individuals. We have a good idea of who's doing well, who's not doing well, who's popping off, etc. The team, you know, they've done all okay. I think you look now, they're sixth in the West, so they're in a legitimate playoff spot. You can say that just in terms of, you know, versus, or they're eighth now. So they were sixth a week ago, and then all these midweek games happen. So they're eighth. They're in a play-in game now, so they're not in a legitimate playoff spot. But, you know, it's 10 points separate first and 10th and 12th right now. So they're in the mix to finish anywhere from second to 12th. And you wouldn't, you know, there's, you wouldn't fault them either way. So that's going on. They've been good at home. 1.9 points per game at home is, you know, decent enough. They've been awful on the road. Then I'll swear they had the Champions League. They won a round, which is nice, but then they got embarrassed in the next round. They won the Canadian Championship. They have a trophy. Between all that, Sam, are the Whitecaps where you think they should be based on the first half? And what do they need to do now in the second half to get to where do you think they should be? Because I think we kind of talked about it in, heading into the season, right? They should win the Canadian Championship. They should be a top four team in the West. First of all, do you agree with that? And, you know, where do you feel have they come up short, and where do you feel like they need to get to those kind of metrics in the second half?
Yeah. Well, what a great loaded question, right? So I think just to get like the formalities out of the way, I'm pretty sure I predicted the Whitecaps to finish sixth in the West, because I will echo, like, I agree with you that they have the squad, they have the potential to be a top four team. I know it's not that simple usually, right? And making these jumps is, don't just because you deserve to be there, you have the quality to be there, doesn't mean it happens. So I think that was part of what went into my thinking. And so, yeah, like they're sitting right there, and it does feel like they've underperformed a bit in the first half of the season. For the first month or so, it felt like Vanni Sartini was getting in the way at times more than he was helping. Since then, I feel like that's changed, and Vanny's actually been able to add some value to the squad. We've seen players grow into roles. We've seen depth contributors start to show up. We've seen just some very simple things like set piece defending get ironed out, Yoi Takaoka adjusting to the league. Like, all of this stuff, I think, is pretty understandable. So, you know, I get the sense that if my prediction was sixth, and that's where I would have expected them to be mid-season, then okay, they're slightly below that. But I also feel like there's a bit of house money there to play with. So I think this is honestly like right about what I expected. The only thing I would say, yeah, I mean, maybe I expected them to be slightly less dominant at home and a little bit better on the road. Those two things, hopefully in the second half of the season, I mean, ideally for Vancouver, they're continue their home form and improve on the road. But honestly, I would expect those two things to level out a little bit. Vanny talked earlier today about the fact that they're actually going to have more like defined road trips now, where they stay out on the road for a couple matches. He thinks that will help because they're not going to be dealing with travel on either end of a road match, where it can get quite disconnected and the players can kind of lose the flow a little bit. So yeah, I honestly don't think I have that many complaints. We knew that fullback, we knew that some areas of depth were a little bit of an issue coming into the season. Nothing has changed there. That's kind of exactly as expected. Sergio Cordova, Alexander Schopf, the fullbacks maybe not quite where you wanted, but as we said when we were kind of diving through all the player ratings, I think if any of those guys show up in a bigger way in the second half, that's value added. It doesn't feel like the floor is going to fall out if someone doesn't, you know, show up in a big way. So I feel like this Whitecaps team's well on their way to being where they want to be at the end of the season. Even if that's not quite a guaranteed home playoff match, I think they're going to be close. And so, I think there's a lot to be positive about, honestly, you know. Injuries, unforeseen circumstances can wipe all of this out very quickly. It's a very tight league, and there's a lot of parity, so things can change quickly. But at the moment, I think you have to be quite happy with the way the first half of the season has gone, and you know, don't want to discount either that they brought home the one trophy that they needed to bring home during the first half of the season, and that's important. So can't complain. An oddly positive performance review from the first half, really. I think it's just they got off that sluggish start, and that was a little bit disheartening, but everything since has been pretty solid.
So what'd you say, like a B plus, maybe somewhere in those ranges?
I would honestly say B plus, because I think the wheels could have come off. It could have been disorganized. They could be far more dysfunctional and performing at less of their full potential than this. And they've managed to avoid that. And it feels like they're trending in the right direction. So maybe it's like a B for like pure performance and a B plus with a little bit of projection of the way they seem to be going.
I like that. I'd probably rate it relatively similar, somewhere in that B, B plus range. And I think it's a bit of a mix. Like, I think Canadian Championship, A plus. I think the fact that they handled some tough road games, were really comfortable. Like 4-1 York. Like, yeah, it was a bit nervy at times, but I'd say A, not A plus, just because, again, they should have played a little more youngsters in those earlier games. Like, I feel like they were almost a bit too like worried of the trap, right? But I think other than that, like, you can't fault the execution. Like, dominant, you go to Pacific, dominant, you go to the final, it was pretty dominant. Like, yeah, it got nervy in the end, but as far as final performances, they played so well for a final. So that's A plus. MLS, it's just been such a mixed bag, right? Like, I think Champions League obviously didn't help. We always hear about the famed Champions League hangover. We're seeing how it hitting a team as good as LAFC. Like, it obviously sucks to play in the Champions League for league play. So I guess I'll throw in that asterisk. But really, the big thing where it's the road form. And I mean, it's, of course, nothing new, nothing there. But I think this is going to be a huge second half, because especially with that League's Cup break and especially with the way the schedule's set up, there's no excuse for the Whitecaps not to figure it out. And they have to. I love the way the schedule's set out, in the sense that I was looking, 10 of their games are on the road, 7 are at home. So there's an emphasis on a road. They had a heavier home schedule at the beginning of the year, and they did pretty well. 1.9 points per game is what they're at, 19 points in 10 home games. Ideally, I've always said you want 2 points an average per game at home and 1 average point per game away. So they're slightly below where, you know, you should be at home. But for the most part, they have been a bit unlucky with those draws, and they've had the good performances where maybe they're a bit better than that. I think with 7 home games left, I think they do crest that 2 point per game mark over the course of the rest of the season at home. What's going to need to change is that road form. 3 points in 7 away games is just, no matter how you chalk it up, they're one of 3 MLS teams without a road win. They haven't won a road game in MLS in over a calendar year. This is going to be crunch time, these 10 games. I think what I was looking at is if they hold as a 1.9 points per game home team, which feels cautious because, again, it feels like they have another level to hit at home, and they've kind of teased it as of late, but, you know, keep having these draws like Cincinnati or Colorado where they should maybe get more. If they're to do 1.9 to be a 50 point team, which is where I think this team should be, that's what top 4 in the West usually is. They would need to average around 1.43 points on the road if they stay at 1.9 to be a 50-point team. That's around 14 points from 10 road games. That's a couple wins in there and a couple draws. It's not unrealistic. Like, it's not like 1.43 isn't anything crazy. For context, it would have been 9th in last year's road form if you averaged 1.4, which is, yeah, it's a bit upper echelon, but it's still not like going to ask them to win every other game on the road or something like that. So it'll be interesting. Can they match that? Like, and I think that'll be really the difference between their ceiling. I think it's huge because, look, with the new playoff format, what's the one great thing about it, as long as you don't finish 9th, you're guaranteed a home game. Because either you finish 8th, you get the one game playing at home, great. If you finish in the top 8, you're guaranteed a home game with the new home away. If you finish top 4, you get a chance for potentially 2 home games. And if you win rounds, you have chances for more home games when it goes back to single elimination. With how tight it is, they have to finish top 4. Because I think if they can finish top 4, there's a chance to make a run. And as soon as they finish 6th or 7th, that would probably indicate that their road form didn't go as planned. That means going to more road games in the playoffs. I think that's going to hurt their chances to make a run. So if they want to legitimately make a chance at MLS Cup, it's going to start with their road form. So that's what I'm watching in the second half. And I think that will really now make or break their season. And I think it's laid out so clearly for them. You have those 10 road games. You can take League's Cup off if you want. If you feel like your team's tired from the Champions League, you can throw B teams and take that rest. So there's no excuse in terms of fatigue, in terms of anything. You got to go out and get those minimum 14 points from 10 road games. And if they can do that, then I'll be like, okay, this is, I'd be confident heading into playoffs. And this team is where they can be. But if not, we'll be like, okay, that is something that maybe has held them back and something they need to hit next year if they want to take that next step that we mentioned of being a top 4, top 3 team in the West.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the big thing, right? So you said 10 road matches remaining, mm-hmm. and you're essentially looking for 14 points.
If you keep your home form, which is 1.9, I do think the Whitecaps could be better. Last year, they were 1.94 per game at home.
I'm going to say, like, let's rely on the current home form and let's not hedge or leverage ourselves on.
Safe.
Let's just say that it's going to stay there. Then, okay, that's either three wins and a bucket load of draws or four wins out of those 10 on the road. Which sounds like a heck of a lot for the Whitecaps right now, but also, like, when you consider some of the
they play Colorado away.
When you consider some of the road performances this season, it's absolutely there for the taking. It's just, can they actually manage to get those results across the line? And I think without squad rotation, without multiple competitions, like, the road matches are always when you have a busy stretch. The road matches are always like, if you're going to sacrifice and you're going to rotate a bunch of guys and sort of not mentally check out, but be a little bit mentally weaker and physically weaker going into a match, it's always going to be the one on the road during the week. So in the second half, without as many roadblocks to deal with, I do think that's a realistic proposition. I'll feel a lot more confident in that when the Whitecaps actually win one on the road. Because right now it just feels like predicting 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 road victories seems kind of crazy when they don't have one. But I do think it's totally reasonable here in the second half.
Well, I'll say to finish it off, I like your 4 wins, 2 draws. That's a safe one. If not 3 wins and 5 draws, that's only means losing 2 road games. So I'll go for the 4 wins, 2, because that allows you still 4 losses. Of their 10 road games, they play Colorado away. Colorado is abysmal. That's one where you should be winning. That's one where you target. You're fresh off an international break. You have no Julian Gressel, but for the most part, it's your full team.
It's the hope. It's the tantalizing possibility that worries me, Alex. And we'll see how that ages,
yes,
depending on when you're listening to the podcast. I mean, I'm predicting a Whitecaps victory, hey, but, you know, it's MLS. Anything can happen.
That's it. We can dive into what's realistic for the Whitecaps, but this is just, if you want to be a top 4 team, this is the way you have to look at it. And they play LAFC away on the weekend. Yeah, it's a tough turnaround. LAFC is struggling right now. Like, they're struggling after the Champions League hangover. That's one where maybe not saying go out and win, but if you want to be a top 4 team, you go out and continue those frustrations. You don't give them any reason to be confident and be LAFC. You go get a draw. They play SKC away. That's a tough game. SKC's in fine form. Okay, maybe that's one of the losses you peg. That and the LAFC one as well, you could argue, if you're going to be pessimistic. Then they play a bunch of home games, 4 in a row. Then it's Portland away. That's a game they've always, you know, that's not sitting there thinking unrealistic. In 2021, they won a huge Portland away game to get to the playoffs. They came back from down 2-0 in that game, actually. It's like Portland away has typically been a kind away game, even though it's a derby. You get Chicago away. Like, come on. That's a gift in terms of the schedule. Chicago's certainly sitting 14th in the East, and they're struggling. The Chicago away. Get New York City away. Like, come on. New York City is sitting 11th in the East right now. They are struggling as well. I don't know how the schedule... This is all in a row, right? They get Toronto FC away. Toronto FC sits 13th, and then we've seen the struggles they've had. The Whitecaps have always typically played well against Toronto and MLS play for whatever reason, just not in the Canadian Championship. Then after that, they return to the West after that weird run of Eastern away games. They get Houston away. That's a tough one. That's one of those where, you know, it's tough. You get RSL away. You never really know. Like, it's that one's always a, you know, either you lose 4-0, you win 4-0. They're currently right above the Whitecaps, so that's what it is. And then their last away game is Seattle away. That's a write-off. I'd say they haven't won in Seattle in 7, 8 years. But look, I think between Toronto, Chicago, and Colorado should be 3 wins right there. That's your 3 of the 4 you need. You got Portland, New York City, Houston, RSL. You know, you'd like to think there's a road win in there. Maybe, like, all I'm saying is the road schedule. Like, I'm not sitting here looking like, oh God, like, it's St. Louis away, LAF, like, yes, LAFC away, Seattle away. But, like, there's a lot of they got very fortunate in terms, especially the East. Like, they could have got Cincinnati away, Nashville away, New England away, Philadelphia away. No, they got Toronto, Chicago, New York City. Like, I think it's something where you do look at that road schedule. It's laid out very clearly in front of them. And I think if they don't meet that and push, you, it could be reasonable to be disappointed and then really start to wonder, okay, is this team genuinely, what's the problem on the road? So that's all I'll say. That's my last word on the Whitecaps. That's my mic drop.
No, absolutely. That's, yeah, well laid out, where you've got those weak Eastern Conference opponents. And then I think you look at, like, yeah, your historic record against Portland, the fact that Sporting Kansas City started the season terribly. Like, yes, they're improved, but you know, that this might be a good year to actually get something done and get at least a draw in SKC. RSL, you drop points in a major way earlier in the season. Maybe you can get some revenge there. Like, there's a lot of good motivation, good storylines, good possibilities in this second half. So, as I kind of said, looking back at the first half of the season, I think there's reasons to be encouraged. There's reasons to see the upward projection. So, it's going to be really interesting. That's kind of the one thing, right? Like, the Whitecaps, if they can figure out their road form a little bit, it does feel like this team could take off, which is exciting. Alex, before we wrap up the show here, we've got one last topic we want to dive into, and that's another halfway update, not halfway through the MLS season, but halfway through League One BC. Oh my goodness, this has happened so quickly. I feel like we were previewing the start of the League One BC season a couple days ago, a couple weeks ago, but no, it's already here. The matches have come thick and fast. Lots of great results, lots of surprising results. I think there's some very interesting stuff in this, these League One BC tables, both on the men's and women's side. And, you know, we've seen players kind of returning from university soccer, returning from the Whitecaps academies, you know, making some trips abroad, stuff like that. And gradually the tables have started to stabilize. The cream has been rising to the top a little bit, but I think also some interesting storylines to monitor. So, kick to you to kind of dive through a couple of things that you've seen through the first half of the League One BC season.
Yeah, and I mean, it's already past the half, because that's the 7-game mark. It's a 14-game regular season. Most teams have played 8 to 10, so they've still got some time to go. But lots to play for, because on the men's side, if you win the regular season, you get the Voyageurs Cup Canadian Championship entry. That's the plan, of course. I guess if any team refuses to host, then maybe they'll look elsewhere, like a playoff winner, whoever finishes second. But that's that appears to be the plan for now. And then on the women's side, if you finish first in the regular season, I think, because I don't think they're going to do the playoffs, you go to the intra Canada Championship, like they did last year. It was like a Memorial Cup style, where you play the League One, Ontario and Quebec winners, and then a host in a bit of a 4-team tournament. I think they're also doing it on the men's this year. I'm not fully sure how that's decided. Basically, all that to play for in terms of berths. Of course, you also have the Juan de Fuca plate for the top combined men's and women's team, which is pretty sick that they've got that. And then, of course, the titles itself in the playoffs. So, which this year, as a reminder, 8 teams, the top 4 go to a semifinal. And then from there, the semifinal goes to a final. So it's a bit of a different format this year, instead of just the top 2 make it. So, I mean, first of all, the Juan de Fuca plate is fascinating, because I think it's such a cool idea to combine the men's and women's points. Got to focus on both, teams and doing well and getting their points. And it's really shaken up. Like, at first, it was kind of not somewhat, and we're running away in Unity, where we're at the top. But Whitecaps are now sitting in third, because it's currently not someone first with 36 combined points, but in 20 games, Unity with 35 in 20. Whitecaps are now with 31, but with 16 games. So 4 games in hand to make up that 4 to 5 point gap. Rovers as well, in just 16 games, up to 27 after some big double win weekends. Highlanders with 23 and 18 remain alive. Harborside has 17 and 18. Their hopes are kind of on life support. Meanwhile, Altitude and Rivers are both eliminated. Altitude with 16 and 18, and then Rivers with 14 and 18. So should be fun between those top 6 that are still alive. It looks like it's going to be not somewhat Unity, Whitecaps, or Rovers. I think it might just be a bit too tall for the Highlanders, who have struggled a bit on the women's side there. And then in terms of the standings, right? It's been a three-horse race. We've kind of seen that, and it's been not somewhat Unity Whitecaps. I think that's going to be the big three. Really, the question is who joins them in the playoffs. Rovers are looking likeliest because they've gotten hot lately, but Altitude are sitting in that fourth spot for now. Harborside's been a tough outfit, and even the Highlanders still lurk just 2 points off fourth. And the women's division's fun. Like, the not somewhat Whitecaps played recently, and that was a phenomenal game. It was Whitecaps went up 1-0, and then not somewhat tied, and then Whitecaps went up 2-1, and then not somewhat won 3-2. It was a back and forth game, just a high level game. So that's going to be a fun battle. Unity as well. So lots like in the women's division, and then the men's division is just, my goodness, it's anyone's division right now. The Highlanders are starting to pick up steam, 17 points, first place. What a Canadian championship entrant that would be. The Highlanders playing over at UVic. Imagine if Pacific goes down to play them, or even if the Whitecaps draw them, or, you know, Vancouver FC has to make that trek over. So Highlanders, a fun story. But quietly, the Rovers, after a bit of an early season CanChamp hangover, sitting in second. Eric Edwardson has popped off lately. He's been ripping goals and is looking for a second straight golden boot. You know, a lot of their players, Mateo Polisi hasn't even been really playing as he's been battling injuries, but Ivan Mejia, despite interest from elsewhere, has been stuck around with Rovers and has been bagging goals as well. So lots to like with the Rovers. And then in third, Unity again, they've got some interesting pieces as well. Some familiar names like a Raheed Rahim, Victory Shambusho as well as part of that unit. Mihai Hodit as well. They've got a very good unit. And Whitecaps leaning around, not somewhat, both with 13. Rivers also still in the mix. Harborside in that mix as well, although a bit out of it, all the way down with 7, and ditto with Altitude. So still 6 teams competing for those 4 spots, and that spot at the top of the table is not assured at all on the men's side for the Canadian championship berth.
Yeah, I think the thing that stood out to me here recently, since we last sort of did a League 1 BC dive, is that the beginning of the season, I feel like we were just not somewhat Whitecaps. That was kind of on both men's and women's side. They were the darlings of the day. And since then, Unity's really come on strong, both the men's and women's teams, and TSS just dangerously lurking. Like, on the men's side, they've really picked up momentum, and they're kind of over the Canadian championship stuff. And then on the women's side, you look, and yes, not so much, the Whitecaps are so dominant early on, but TSS just lurking there, and they got some players back. They've started to play some better football. And I think for that overall title as well, TSS is, an under the radar shout, because I could see the women's side having a much better second half. And if the men's side kind of takes control, I do think overall, based on experience, reputation, that's the most complete men's team. Right. So I think, TSS is kind of the presumptive favorites going into the season, and they maybe didn't get off to the hottest start, but I could see just overall as a club, they're sort of surging up the table. And a big shout out to Unity, because I don't know if they were maybe expecting, or people were expecting them to have quite the success they've had so far, but it's great to see really the depth and variety of all these teams. They've, for teams that have started pretty recently it already feels like there's a little culture of supporters environment around each of these teams. And, even like Rivers, a new entrant down at the bottom, has been struggling a little bit. It still feels like there's a lot of positives. There's a lot of things to be pretty excited about. So looking forward to the end of this League One BC season. And just can't wait to take in more.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch, because I've been able to get out to a few lately. Again, I did that not somewhat Whitecaps. I went to Rovers Rivers. That was a fun one. The Rovers women, Rovers Rivers women's game was bonkers. It finished like 6-5 or something ridiculous, like 6-4. So many back and forth moments. that game was crazy. Stella Downing scored a nice goal. Shout out to Maddie Ma, who sometimes does photography for the third sub. She ended up scoring, getting an assist in that game. So shout out to her as well, shooting on and off the field as well. And so that was a really entertaining game. And then the men's game as well was crazy, because that day Eric Edwardson scored like a bicycle kick, and he also scored from outside the box, and Ivan Mejia as well. Like, it was just such a fun game. But then also the Rivers had such a nice goal as well. And then I was able to check out the Whitecaps not somewhat. Then the Rovers altitude, that's the Ironworkers derby. I love what's going on there. It's cool to see the support really in the second half. Well, the second half, the end, I need to get out to a Unity game. Cause again, their men's team, especially, has got fascinating names, but their women's team, it's like last year was such a two horse race really in the women's in the end between the Whitecaps and then Varsity, but now not somewhat. Whereas a lot of these teams, especially a team like Unity, they weren't able to do much. Now that they've taken such a huge stride forward and they're sitting with 20 points, I want to be able to check them out a bit more in person and see what they're about. Because so far, them and Harborside are the only two teams I haven't seen in person. Because I got to see the Highlanders, I got to see the Rivers, everyone else except those two. So those are hopefully I get a chance to get it out. My dream is that there's a Langley, a game in Langley between Vancouver FC, and then you maybe head out to Chilliwack and check Unity, kind of like a triple header kind of vibes. But I'll have to check my schedule. But if not, hopefully Unity come to closer to the Lower Mainland, I can check them out. But yeah, the women's side is going to be fascinating. Yeah, just the Canadian Championship implication on the men's side is so huge, because I'm thinking and looking at those teams that are all still in it. Like, imagine the Highlanders hosting. Imagine the Rovers hosting again. Like, was the upset a fluke? Can they do it again? Imagine if Unity hosts, like, all the way out in Chilliwack. It'd be a funny story to imagine the Whitecaps getting on a bus, or Vancouver FC playing the, playing Unity, or even if Pacific got drawn with them, taking the ferry and having to go all the way deep into Chilliwack. You know, I don't know what would happen if the Whitecaps qualify the Whitecaps 3 team. I think it's something where they might, give away their berth, which is fair. But even though that would be hilarious if they somehow got an entrant into the competition, not somewhat hosting would just be a great story. Indigenous owned team getting a chance to host at Thunderbird. Even Rivers, like, I love the chance for a team to have to go up to Kamloops to play in a CanChamp game. So I just love those implications, and it just shows on the women's side, hopefully we can get something like that when Project 8 kicks off, right? That there's these chance for these pro teams to play these League One teams in cup competition, because that's what the sport's all about. But ultimately, all this to say, could tell the excitement we got talking about League One. Certainly for me, like, get out to these games if you can. They're a good time. If you're a beer drinker, beer's usually cheap. Great views. There's some great talent. The crowds are usually good, especially if you go to some of these games where they've been building these supporters culture. And look, you're already seeing players that are the players of tomorrow. Every time I go, ever since last year, I keep hearing about CPL interest for some of these League One guys, and we've seen some of them make the jump, and sounds like a few of them could even make the jump this summer and in the off season. So if you want to get there early on some of these talents, like some of these guys you're seeing around the CPL, like Anthony White had a great game for Vancouver FC on the weekend. He was playing at Rovers last year, right? So this is the time to kind of see those next stars, and ditto on the women's side, especially on the national team level. You want to see some of these players that are going to be playing at the U20 World Cup. Well, some of them are playing for Whitecaps and elsewhere. So definitely, if you like the grassroots side of the game, these games are just they just mean so much more. I go to like an MLS game, a CPL game, and a League One game on a weekend, I'll be looking back like, oh, the League One game was the vibe. That was the one where we had a good time.
Yeah, I very much look forward to when I'm back in BC at some point, being able to check out some of those matches. Very, very envious of all the grassroots stuff you've been able to take in recently. But I hope everyone's enjoyed this Whitecaps podcast. A little bit of mid-season awards, a little bit of mid-season storylines. Talk some League One BC as well on the back end. Thanks everyone for checking in on the website, listening to the podcast, all the comments, all the support. We really do appreciate it. If you have feedback on any of the written stuff, any of the podcasting stuff, leave us a like, leave us a comment, all of that good stuff on the socials. Alex, I'll kick it to you here for us to sign off.
Absolutely. And yeah, thanks to everyone. Been appreciating all the listens and reads of the new website, and bearing with us as we continue to work out little, niggles here and there, but for the most part, it's been great to keep continue to push that project forward. And yeah, exciting times coming up as the summer approaches. It's the dog days of the CPL, which we didn't talk about. Lots of fun going on there. League One hitting the crunch time, you know, with the playoffs and all that. You know, Whitecaps rolls on at the halfway mark. No shortage of footy in BC. So we're happy to be here and cover it. You can find me on Twitter, Alex Gungiruzic. And of course, find us at the third sub for the website and the written stuff. You know, for now on Twitter, we're still posting on at third sub pod. But either way, if you follow that, the third sub, you will find it there. And of course, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you do have a moment, if you want to leave a review, means a lot, always helps out. So if you've enjoyed the podcast, feel free, of course, no obligation. If you have the extra seconds to spare, it goes a long way. And other than that, you can find us again soon. We'll be back sooner rather than later. Lots of Whitecaps going on because MLS does not believe in breaks. And while that's maybe not good for the players, it's great if you love watching soccer as we do. So no complaints there. And we'll be back again with so much more to talk about very soon.
Yeah, you can find me as always at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter at thirdsub.ca. We'll shout out Caleb Wilkins did a great piece on just kind of checking in on where the Caps are at on the road to being MLS Cup contenders. Mike Rice has been doing a great job for us covering the Pacific. Andrew Ball, Coffee with Caps, as always, you know, and we've got all our pre and post-match content you've come to expect. So yeah, stay tuned for more of that. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll chat again.